Act 5. 120. Exterior, the Island Market, late afternoon. In worsening conditions that now make moving a serious problem, Mike, Hatch, and Linoge come out of the alley and struggle toward the steps of the market. Linoge has been made to walk in front of them, and now he looks upward, smiling. 121. Exterior, Island Market's roof. Here is a little nest of radio antennas that serve the various two ways inside the store. The tallest of these radio antennas snaps off and goes rolling down the back slant of the roof. 122. Exterior. Foot of the market steps with Mike, Hatch, Linoge. Hatch, with a flinch.
What was that?
Mike. Antenna, I think. Never mind now. Go on. Hatch. Heads up the steps, giving Linoge a healthy berth. 123. Exterior, the town hall. Sound. That same twanging snap. 124. Interior, town office with Ursula. She's at her radio, which is on a table below the storm emergency take shelter poster. From the radio comes the loud sound of static. Ursula.
Come back. Rodney, are you there? Come back, Rodney.
Nothing. After another moment or two of twiddling, Ursula racks the mic and looks at the useless radio with disgust. 125. Interior, the market. Hatch, coated with snow, steps in. The shoppers react to the shotgun. Before, it was under his arm and pointed at the floor. Now, he's holding it up against his shoulder and pointed at the ceiling, like Steve McQueen in Wanted Dead or Alive. Hatch looks around at the shoppers. Hatch.
Mike wants all you folks to move back on both sides, okay? No one in aisle two. We've got us a bad guy, and we can't use the back door to bring him in like we'd like to, so just move back. Give us some room.
Peter Godso.
Why'd he kill her?
Hatch. Just move back, Pete, okay? Mike's standing out in the snow, and his feet must be pretty cold by now.
Also, we're all going to feel better when this guy's locked up. Move back, folks. Give him a clear way up that second aisle.
The customers move aside in two groups, leaving the center of the market clear. Peter Godso and Robbie Beals are with one group, the one on the left, as you look toward the back of the market. Molly is in the other, standing with Kat and Tess Marchant, who has moved away from the cash register. Hatch surveys this and decides it'll do. It'll have to. He goes to the door and opens it. He beckons. 126. Exterior, the porch with Mike and Linoge. Linoge walks ahead, cupped hands at his waist. Mike is alert for anything, or so he no doubt hopes. Mike.
Not one wrong move, Mr. Linoge. You mind me now.
127. Interior. The market. Features Hatch. He lowers the shotgun to port arms, one hand on the barrel and the other wrapped around the trigger. Linoge, coated with snow, eyebrows crusted white, comes in. Mike follows closely, the gun now raised and pointed at Linoge's back. Mike.
Right down aisle two. Nowhere else.
But Martha's killer stops for a moment and surveys the clusters of frightened islanders. Here is an enormously important moment. Linoge is like a tiger that has been let out of its cage. The trainer is there, two of them, counting Hatch, but when it comes to tigers, only bars, lots of them, strong and thick, are safe. And Linoge doesn't look like a prisoner or act like one. He stares at the residents of Little Tall with shining eyes. The residents look back at him with fear and fascination. Mike prods him with the gun.
Come on, let's go.
Linoge starts, then stops. He looks at Peter.
Linoge. Peter Godso, my favorite seafood wholesaler, standing shoulder to shoulder with my favorite politician.
Peter flinches at being addressed by name. Mike prodding with the gun.
Come on, andale, let's just...
Linoge ignores him.
How's the fish business? Not so good, is it? Lucky you've got the marijuana business to fall back on. How many bales have you got in the back of the warehouse right now? 10, 20, 40?
Peter Gatso reacts violently. The shot has gone home. Robbie Beals moves away from his friend as if afraid of catching a flu germ. And for a moment, Mike is too shocked to shut Linoge up. Linoge,
better make sure you've got it wrapped up good, Pete. There's going to be a hell of a storm surge tonight when the tide comes high.
Mike reaches out and shoves Linoge's shoulder, good and hard. Linoge stumbles forward but keeps his balance easily. This time, it is Cat Withers that his bright eye fixes upon. Linoge, as if greeting an old friend.
Cat Withers!
She flinches as if struck. Molly puts an arm around her and looks at Linoge with fear and mistrust.
Linoge, you're looking well. But why not? It's just an in-office procedure these days. Nothing to it.
Cat, real agony.
Mike, make him stop!
Mike pushes Linoge again, but this time Linoge won't budge. He's as firm as, well, as firm as that troublesome stuck door out back.
Linoge, went up to Derry to have it taken care of, didn't you? Don't suppose you've told your folks about it yet? Or Billy? No? My advice would be to go ahead. What's a little scrape among friends these days?
Cat puts her hands to her face and begins to cry. Any number of townspeople are looking at her with shock, wonder, and horror. One looks absolutely stunned. Billy Soames, about 23, is wearing a red apron. He's Betty Soames' son, also the market's produce man and janitor. He's Cat's steady guy, and this is the first he knows of how Cat got rid of their child. Mike places the barrel of his gun against the back of Linoge's head and thumbs back the hammer.
Mike, move or I'll move you.
Linoge starts up the center aisle. He's not afraid of the gun to his head. He's simply finished with this bit of business. 128. Interior. By the checkout, with Molly and Cat. Cat is sobbing hysterically, and Molly has her arms around her. Tess Marchant is dividing her attention between the sobbing girl and the incredulous Billy Soames. All at once, Molly wakes up to a very important consideration.
Molly.
Where's Ralphie?
129. Interior. Aisle 2, with Linoge and Mike, Hatch in background. As they approach the end of the aisle, Ralphie comes tearing around it from the other side with a box of the sweet cereal in his hands.
Ralphie.
Mom? Mommy, can I have this one?
With absolutely no hesitation at all, Linoge bends, picks Ralphie up by the shoulders, and swings him around. All at once, Mike's son is between Linoge and Mike's gun. The kid's a hostage. Mike reacts first with shock and then with sickening, agonized fear.
Mike, put him down, or...
Linoge, smiling, almost laughing.
Or what?
130. Interior, by the counter, with Molly. She loses all interest in Cat and hurries toward the head of aisle 2 so she can see what's happening. One of the island residents, Kirk Freeman, tries to stop her.
Molly,
let me go, Kirk.
She gives a good hard yank, and he does. When she sees that Linoge has her son, she gasps loudly and her hands go to her mouth. Mike gestures her to stay where she is without ever taking his eyes from Linoge. Behind Molly, the market customers begin to gather, staring tensely at the confrontation. 131. Interior. Aisle 2 with Linoge and Ralphie. Close up. Linoge puts his forehead to Ralphie's so the two of them can look intimately into each other's eyes. Ralphie is too young to be scared. He looks into that shining, smiling, interested tiger's gaze with a kind of breathless interest.
Linoge, I know you.
Ralphie.
You do?
Linoge, you're Ralph Emmerich Anderson, and I know something else.
Ralphie is fascinated, unaware of Hatch racking a shell into the shotgun, unaware that the market is turned into a powder keg of which he is the fuse. He is fascinated, almost hypnotized by Linoge.
Ralphie.
What?
Linoge plants a quick, light kiss on the bridge of Ralphie's nose. Linoge, you have a fairy saddle. Ralphie, smiling, delighted.
That's what my daddy calls it.
Linoge returns the smile. You bet. And speaking of daddy. He sets Ralphie down, but for a moment, he's leaning so close that Ralphie is still, in effect, his hostage. Ralphie sees the handcuffs. Ralphie,
why are you wearing those?
Linoge, because I choose to. Go on. See your dad. He turns Ralphie around and gives him a light swat on the butt. Ralphie sees his father and lights up in a smile. Before he can take more than a step or two, Mike grabs him and pulls the boy into his arms. Ralphie sees the pistol. Ralphie.
Daddy, why have you got...
Molly.
Ralphie!
She sprints for him, brushing past Hatch and knocking a bunch of canned goods to the floor. The cans roll everywhere. She pulls Ralphie out of Mike's arms and hugs him frantically. Mike, flustered and rocky, who wouldn't be, returns his focus to the faintly smiling Linoge, who has now had about 9 billion chances to get away. Ralphie.
Why's Daddy pointing a gun at that man?
Mike. Mal, get him out of here. Molly.
What are you...
Mike, get him out of here! She flinches at the unaccustomed shout and begins to retreat with Ralphie in her arms toward the other people clustering timidly at the foot of the aisle. She steps on a can and it rolls out from under her. Before she can fall, Kirk Freeman catches and steadies her. Ralphie, looking over her shoulder at his daddy, is finally upset. Ralphie.
Don't shoot him, Daddy. He knows about the fairy saddle.
Mike, more to Linoge than Ralphie. I'm not going to shoot him. Not if he goes where he's supposed to. He looks toward the end of the aisle. Linoge smiles and nods as if to say, of course, since you insist, and starts that way, hands in front of him again. Hatch catches up to Mike. Hatch, what are we going to... Mike,
lock him up. What else?
He's terrified, ashamed, relieved. You name it, Mike is feeling it. Hatch sees enough of Mike's emotions to be abashed and retires a bit into the background as Mike shadows Linoge to the upper end of the aisle. 132. Interior. Angle on meat counter and constable's office door. As Linoge and Mike get to the head of the aisle, Linoge turns left toward the constable's office as if he knows where it is. Hatch follows after. And then, from aisle one, comes Billy Soames. He's too angry to be scared, and before Mike can stop him, he grabs Linoge and throws him against the meat counter. Billy Soames.
What do you know about Katrina? And how do you know it?
Mike has had enough. He grabs Billy by the back of his shirt and heaves him against a rack of powdered herbs and fish fixins. Billy hits it hard and goes spalling. Mike.
What are you, crazy? This guy's a killer. Stay out of his way. And stay out of mine, Billy Soames.
Linoge. Also, clean yourself up. We glimpse that strange, blackish wavering in his eyes again. 133. Interior. Billy. Close up. At first, he sits there where he landed, looking question marks at Linoge. Then his nose gushes blood. He feels it. Reaches up to catch the flow and looks unbelievingly at the blood on his palms. Cat runs up aisle one to where he is and kneels beside him. She wants to help him. She wants to do anything, really, that will take away the awful look of surprise and hurt anger on his face. But Billy is having none of it. He shoves her back. Billy Soames.
Leave me alone.
He lurches to his feet. 134. Interior, by the meat counter, wider. Linoge.
Before he gets too self-righteous, Katrina, ask him how well he knows Jenna Freeman.
Billy flinches, stunned. 135. Interior, Kirk Freeman, in aisle two. Kirk Freeman.
What do you know about my sister?
136. Interior, resume, meat counter. Linoge.
That horses aren't all she enjoys riding when the weather is hot. Right, Billy?
Cat looks at Billy, stricken. He wipes at his bleeding nose with the back of his hand and looks anywhere but at her. His self-righteous, wounded anger has dissolved into a kind of slinking furtiveness. His face says, "Let me out of here." Mike still looks like he can't believe how screwed up this whole thing has gotten. "Mike, move away from this man, Cat. You too, Billy." She doesn't move, perhaps doesn't hear. There are tears on her cheeks. Hatch uses one hand to push her gently away from the door marked Constable's office. He inadvertently pushes her in Billy's direction, and they both shrink back. "Hatch, kindly. Got to get out of his grabbing range, darling." This time she goes blundering past Billy, who makes no move to stop her, toward the front of the store. Mike, meanwhile, steps forward and picks a package of plastic bags, the kind you use to save leftovers, off a display. Then he puts the muzzle of his gun between Linoja's shoulder blades. "Mike, come on, move." 137. Interior, the constable's office. The wind is very loud, scary, shrieking like a train whistle. We can hear shingles clapping and boards creaking. The door opens. Linoja comes in, followed by Mike and Hatch. Linoja moves toward the cell, then stops as a particularly hard gust of wind strikes the building and makes it shudder. Snow puffs in under the loading dock door. Hatch, "I don't like the sound of that." Mike, "Move, Mr. Linoja." As they pass the desk, Mike puts down the box of plastic bags and picks up a large combination padlock. From his pocket, he takes his key ring, looking ruefully at the busted-off loading door key for a second. He hands the keys and the combination lock to Hatch. He also swaps weapons, giving Hatch his pistol and taking the shotgun. As they reach the cell, "Mike, put your hands up and grab a couple of bars." Linoja does. "Now, spread your legs." Linoja does. "Wider." Linoja does. "I'm going to pat you down, and if you move, my good friend Alton Hatcher is going to save us all a lot of wear and tear." Hatch gulps, but points the pistol. Mike sets the shotgun aside. "Mike, don't even twitch, Mr. Linoja. You had your filthy hands on my son, so don't you so much as twitch." Mike reaches into the pockets of Linoja's peacoat and brings out the yellow gloves. They are blotched and stained with Martha's blood. Mike grimaces with distaste and tosses them onto the desk. He rummages in the jacket pockets some more and finds nothing. He reaches into the front pockets of Linoja's jeans and pulls them inside out. They're empty. Checks the back pockets. Nothing but a few lint balls. He takes off Linoja's watch cap and looks inside it. Nothing. He tosses it on the desk with the gloves. "Mike, where's your wallet?" Nothing from Linoja. "Where's your wallet, huh?" Mike slaps Linoja twice on the shoulder. First time, sort of friendly. Second time, sort of hard. Still, no response. "Mike, huh?" Hatch, uneasy. "Mike, take it easy." "Mike, guy had his hands on my son. Had his face right down in my son's face. Guy kissed my son's nose. Don't tell me to take it easy. Where's your wallet, sir?" Mike shoves Linoja hard. Linoja crashes into the bars of the cell, but keeps his high grip on the home-welded bars and his legs spread. "Mike, where's your wallet? Where's your bank card? Where's your blood donor card? Where's your discount card from Value Mart? What sewer did you crawl through to get here, huh? Answer me." All his frustration, anger, fear, and humiliation are on the verge of coming out. He grabs Linoja by the hair and slams his face into the bars. "Mike, where's your wallet?" Hatch, "Mike." Mike slams Linoja's face into the bars again. He'd do it again, too, but Hatch reaches out and grabs his arm. "Hatch, Mike, stop it." Mike stops, takes a deep breath, and somehow gets hold of himself. Outside, the wind gusts, and we hear the faint sound of crashing waves. "Mike, he's breathing hard. Take off your boots." Linoja, "I'll have to let go of the bars to do that." They lace up. Mike kneels. He grabs the shotgun. He props the stock against the floor and plants the barrel's dead center in the seat of Linoja's jeans.
Mike, if you move, sir, you'll never have to worry about constipation again. Hatch looks more and more scared. This is a side of Mike he's never seen, and could have done without. Mike, meanwhile, unties Linoja's boots and loosens the laces. Then he stands up, takes the shotgun, and stands back. Mike, kick them off. Linoja kicks them off. Mike nods to Hatch, who bends down, keeping a skittery eye on Linoja as he does, and picks them up. Hatch feels inside them, then shakes them. Hatch, nothing. Mike, toss them over by the desk. Hatch does. Mike, step into the cell, Mr. Linoja. Move slowly and keep your hands where I can see them. Manoj opens the door of the cell and swings it back and forth a time or two before going in. The door squeaks and doesn't hang quite true when it's all the way open. Manoj touches a couple of the home welds with the ball of one finger and smiles. Mike, you think it won't hold you? It'll hold you. Yet Mike doesn't look entirely sure, and Hatch looks even more doubtful. Linoge steps in, crosses the cell, and sits down facing the door. He draws his legs up so that the heels of his stocking feet, like athletic socks, are on the edge of the cot, and he is looking at us from between his bent knees. We will see him in this same posture for some little time now. His hands dangle limply. He wears a trace of a smile. If we saw a guy looking at us this way, we'd probably run. It's that caged tiger look. Very still and watchful, but full of pent-up violence. Mike closes the cell door, and Hatch uses a key from the ring to lock it. With that done, he shakes the door. It's locked, but he and Mike share an unhappy glance just the same. That door is as rattly as the last tooth in an old man's jaw. The cell is for the likes of Sonny Brodigan, who has a nasty habit of getting drunk and breaking the windows in his ex-wife's house with stones. Not for a stranger with no ID who beat an old widow to death. Mike crosses to the loading dock door, looks at the deadbolt, then tries the knob. The door opens easily, letting in a frigid gasp of wind and a swirl of snow. Hatch's mouth drops open. Hatch. Mike, I swear it wouldn't budge. Mike closes the door. As he finishes doing that, Robbie Beals comes in. He crosses to the desk and reaches for one of the gloves. Mike, don't touch that. Robbie draws his hand back.
Does he have any ID on him?
Mike, I want you out of here. Robbie picks up the joke sign and shakes it at Mike. Robbie,
I want to tell you something, Anderson. Your sense of humor is entirely...
Hatch, who actually put that sign around the dummy's neck, looks embarrassed. Neither of the other men notice. Mike snatches the damned thing out of Robbie's hand and dumps it in the wastebasket. Mike, I don't have the time or the patience for this. Get out or I'll throw you out. Robbie looks at him and sees that Mike absolutely means it. Robbie backs toward the door. Robbie,
come town meeting? There's maybe going to be a change in law enforcement on Little Tall.
Mike, town meeting's in March. This is February. Now get the hell out. Robbie leaves. Mike and Hatch hold their positions for a moment, and then Mike lets out his breath in a long whoosh. Hatch looks relieved. Mike, I think I handled that pretty well, don't you? Hatch, like a diplomat. Mike takes another long, steadying breath. He opens the sandwich bags. As he and Hatch finish talking, he puts the bloody gloves in two bags and the cap in a third. Mike, I have to go out and... Hatch, you're going to leave me alone with him? Mike, try to raise the state police barracks in Machias. And stay away from him. Hatch, I should say you can count on that. 138. Interior, the rear of the market by the meat counter. Perhaps two dozen townsfolk have clogged the aisles, looking hopefully and fearfully toward the constable's office door. To one side, glowering like a banked furnace, is Robbie. Robbie,
has now been joined by the other two members of his family, wife Sandra and the charming Don from daycare. In the forefront of the townsfolk is Molly with Ralphie in her arms. When the door opens and she sees Mike, she hurries forward. Mike puts a reassuring arm around her. Ralphie.
You didn't hurt him, Daddy, did you?
Mike. No, honey, just put him safe. Ralphie.
In the jail? Did you put him in the jail? What did he do?
Mike. Not now, Ralph. He kisses the fairy saddle on Ralphie's nose and turns to the gathered people. Mike.
Peter. Peter Godso.
People look around, murmuring. After a moment or two, Peter Godso shoulders forward, looking embarrassed and blustery, also a little frightened. Peter Godso.
Mike, about what that fellow said, that's the biggest crock of...
Mike. Uh-huh. Go on back there with Hatch. We're going to watch this guy, and it's going to be by the buddy system. Peter Godso, immensely relieved.
Okay. You bet.
He goes through the door to the constable's office. Mike, his arms still around Molly, faces his neighbors.
Mike, I feel like I have to close the store, folks.
Murmurs of reaction.
You're welcome to take what you've got. I trust you to settle up when the storm's over. Right now, I've got a prisoner to deal with.
A worried-looking, middle-aged woman, Della Bissonette, pushes forward. Della.
Did that man really kill poor old Martha?
More murmurs this time. Frightened, unbelieving, Molly is looking at her husband tensely. She also looks as if she wishes she could strike Ralphie temporarily deaf.
Mike.
In time you'll have the whole story, but not now.
Please, Della, all of you, help me do my job. Grab your stuff and go home before the storm gets any worse. I want a few of you men to stick around a minute or two longer. Kirk Freeman, Jack Carver, Sonny Brodigan, Billy Soames, Johnny Harriman, Robbie. That'll do for a start.
The men move forward as the others turn and start to go. Robbie looks typically puffed up with self-importance. Billy has a wad of paper towels pressed to his nose. 139. Interior, the constable's office. Hatch is at the desk, trying to use the radio. Peter looks at the cell with nervous fascination. Linoge, sitting on the bunk, looks back from between his spread knees and cocked feet. Hatch.
Machias, this is Alton Hatcher on Little Tall. We have a police emergency here. Do you read, Machias? Come on back if you read.
Let's go of the button. There's nothing but static. Hatch.
Machias, this is Alton Hatcher on Channel 19. If you read...
Peter Godso.
They don't. You've lost your good antenna off your roof.
Hatch sighs. He knows it, too. He turns down the sound, muting the static. Peter Godso.
Try the phone.
Hatch gives him a startled look, then picks up the phone. He listens, pushes a few buttons at random, then hangs up. Peter Godso.
No, huh? Well, it was a long shot.
Peter looks back toward Linoge, who is staring at him. Hatch, meanwhile, is looking at Peter with some fascination.
Hatch. You don't really have a load of Panama Red out there behind your lobster traps, do you?
Peter looks at him and says nothing. 140. Interior. The rear of the market. Featuring Molly, Ralphie, Mike. The townspeople are on the move, except for the little group of men Mike has singled out, draining toward the front of the market and the outside world. There's a steady jingling from the bell over the door as folks leave.
Molly.
You going to be all right?
Mike.
Course.
Molly.
When will you be home?
Mike.
When I can. Take the truck. You won't get 300 yards in the car. I've never seen it come down hard and fast.
I'll use the Island Services truck or get someone to drop me off when this is squared away. I have to go back to Martha's house long enough to secure it. There are 1,000 questions she'd like to ask, but really can't. Little pitchers have big ears. She kisses him on the corner of the mouth and turns to go. 141.
Interior, by the cash register, with Cat and Tess Marchant. Cat is still sobbing. Tess holds her and rocks her, but we can see she, Tess, is pretty blown away by what Linoge said. Molly gives Tess a questioning look as she carries Ralphie toward the door. Tess nods, as if to say she's got it under control. Molly nods back and goes on out. 142. Exterior, in front of the market. Molly carries Ralphie carefully down the steps in what has become a blinding snowstorm. She walks toward the camera, having to brace against the wind with every step, and this baby is just getting warmed up. Ralphie, shouting to be heard.
The island won't blow away, will it?
Molly.
No, honey, of course not.
But Molly doesn't look so sure. 143. Exterior, the center of town, high angle. The snow is coming down furiously. There are a few vehicles moving on Main and Atlantic, but they won't be moving much longer. Little Tall Island is effectively cut off from the outside world. The wind shrieks, the snow sheets, and we fade to black. This ends Act 5.